like I'm like a kid on a playground, right? A huge playground where I could go and play on anything I wanted.
Science is awesome. It's fascinating. It sparks curiosity. And it's the reason most of us are alive today. But sometimes it sucks, from applying to funding, to spending hours in the lab, to lack of representation in many science fields. On this podcast, we talk about the ins and outs of scientific research and how it impacts our lives. Welcome to Science Sucks. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 23 of the podcast. I'm Evie, neuroscientist, science communicator, snowboarder, and host of the Science Sucks radio show and podcast. Welcome to the show. So this week, we're talking to a low-key science writing legend, Dr. Kimberly McCoy. Just wait till you hear what this episode has in store. So Dr. Kimberly McCoy, who goes by Burly, chased her love of snowboarding and carved her way through a PhD in biochemistry. Get it? Carving, snowboarding. Now, outside the lab, she's a science writer. She writes scripts for a teeny tiny, only slightly well-known YouTube channel called It's Okay to Be Smart. FYI, this channel has almost 3 million subscribers. Videos she's created include How Habits Change Your Brain, The Science of Farts, and Why Do We Cry? Sad Tears. Not only that, but Burly has just wrapped up her summer working at PBS NewsHour. Yes, that PBS, the public broadcasting service. For those of you outside the US, or like me, don't have cable, PBS NewsHour is an American evening TV news program. Now, you might be wondering, how did Burly land this awesome gig? And here's the coolest part. Burly scored one of the most coveted prizes in all of science communication, the AAAS Mass Media Fellowship. The AAAS is the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and they are a huge organization that promotes science for the people. Each year, they award a few fellowships to outstanding science communicators like Burly. Part of this fellowship is a 10-week internship with a media organization. Recipients can be placed in awesome newsrooms like National Geographic, Scientific American, NPR, or like Burly, PBS. If you're thinking, wow, that sounds awesome and I want to be a part of it, you might be eligible for the fellowship. You can learn more about it and science writing in general from Burly herself in this episode. So without further ado, here is the one, the only, Dr. Kimberly McCoy.
I came upon science, both science and writing, as a career choice pretty accidentally. It was kind of like I saw the next thing that I wanted to do and I went towards it and I kept doing that. And then suddenly I have a PhD in science and I'm involved in science writing. So it was kind of serendipitous, but the way I got into science was I was studying psychology in community college in St. Louis. So I grew up in St. Louis and I thought psychology was interesting, so I studied it at a community college. And they also had philosophy courses, so I was interested in that. But I took a trip out west randomly when I was 21 and fell in love with snowboarding. And I promise we'll get back to science. But I decided to drop everything and move out to Colorado, this tiny town in Colorado. And luckily, I had finished all of the community college classes I could take in a couple of years. And it turned out the town I wanted to move to also had a college. So I transferred all my credits. I got my snowboarding mountain life dream. And I ended up studying psychology at a school called Western State in Gunnison, Colorado. And while I was there, I found out they had a major called biopsychology, which I didn't even know was a thing. But it turns out I really loved brains and like dissecting them. So I majored in biopsychology, and that meant I had to take a lot of biology courses. And then I discovered molecular biology, which sounded super interesting. And I thought, well, I can't just get one major. I've got to get two, of course. And so now I'm double majoring in cell biology and biopsychology. And by the end of undergrad, which took about 6 years, I realized what I was actually interested in was biochemistry. And at this point, I had like 200 credits, and I couldn't keep going. But I knew that for my graduate work, I wanted to study biochemistry. And so I applied for graduate school. I took a year off, and I applied for graduate schools, mostly actually in molecular biology. And the program I got into was kind of by accident also. I really wanted to get into Montana State University, but they had a program called the Molecular Biosciences Program that I had applied for, which basically lets you rotate in any department you want the first year, and then you decide where you want to study after that. I wanted to get into this program so bad, but they didn't accept me, and they sent me an email that said, if you want us to forward your application to any of these other departments, we will. And I was kind of disappointed, and I said, okay, sure, neuroscience, because I was interested in that. And then they had a chemistry and biochemistry department. But chemistry kind of, it kind of made me nervous. You know, imposter syndrome, I wasn't sure if I could do it. But they forwarded my application, and they accepted me. And so now I'm going to my dream school and studying chemistry, which terrified me at first. Mm-hmm. But when I got there, I heard a talk by my, you know, who would become my research advisor, and it just blew me away, and I was hooked. So I spent 6 years in a PhD program and came out with a degree in biochemistry.
Wow. I love hearing people's stories, because you said you moved out because of snowboarding and it brought you there.
Definitely. That is absolutely why I moved out there. And I still love snowboarding to this day, and now I love science too.
Okay, so how hype is that? I think we can all take some inspo from how she chased her love for snowboarding right into a PhD. Seriously, y'all, don't let your passions fall to the side in pursuit of your career or academic success. Your path might not end up being a skyrocketing, straightforward trajectory of academic success, but it's still cool and totally valid. And it might even be more fulfilling if you're doing what you love along the way. So while Burley's snowboarding adventures might have been downhill, because she's snowboarding down a slope, her career was only uphill from there. But okay, bad puns aside, let's hear how she got curious about science writing.
So with science writing, I feel like it was kind of a big circle, coming back to a big circle, because I've always loved to write. I remember my mom, who is a computer programmer, and completely, she talks about how bad she was in English. She said as a kid, I would come home with these essay reports, you know, like in third grade or fifth grade, and I'd hand it to her and say, is this enough? Is my homework done? And she'd look at it, the front page, the back page, and she says, Kimberly, this isn't a one paragraph assignment. She said, I just loved writing. I think I won a poetry contest in like third grade. So it was always one of my interests, and I even took creative writing at that community college. But when I got into science and started studying it in undergrad and in grad school, it kind of fell away. I mean, I always enjoyed the writing while I was in grad school, but it was technical writing, so it was a little bit different. But I was lucky. My advisor, he was a great mentor, is a great mentor, and he would always focus on storytelling, whether you were giving a presentation or if you were writing. And so the writing I was doing in graduate school was still technical, but I still, you know, found enjoyment with it. And as a career, I don't know, I think it was kind of a slow idea that came to me that I could actually make this a career. But a big part, honestly, of why I decided to go this way is because of where I want to live. I'm right now in my cabin in Montana, which is pretty remote. We're on 50 acres, and we have one neighbor. Wow. So the idea of working out of a research lab was, that was going to be tough. And I loved writing so much, so it kind of slowly occurred to me towards the middle and end of my PhD that I could make a living off of science writing, combining two things I really love. So in maybe it was the fourth or fifth year of my PhD, I can't remember, there was a call to graduate students in science departments asking if anyone was interested in being involved in launching a blog, a science blog from our university, which I was at Indiana University at the time. And a lot of people showed up, probably 40, 50 people. And over the course of the year, while we were discussing it, that number shrank and shrank. And we were left with kind of the core people who co-founded SCIU, S-C-I-U, Conversations in Science at Indiana University. And so I got to kind of see that process happen. And they're still publishing today once a week, I believe. But I got my feet wet in science writing. And oh gosh, now I go back to those first articles and look at my writing and I just cringe, but everyone has to start somewhere.
Of course.
So I kind of, yeah, I got my toes wet with the blog, and then I started looking for any opportunity I possibly could. And, you know, 2-3 years later, I'm starting to form what you might call a career in science communication.
Yeah. Wow. I really love that. You were like, oh, I'm studying science, creative writing isn't for me anymore, but it absolutely is, and you found a job that mixes those.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Even though it's nonfiction, everyone has a writing style, right? It might take you a while to develop it and to find it, but it's definitely a creative process.
Yeah, I really relate to that. I always loved English class. I wanted to be an author, like a fiction author when I was growing up, and then I found science. Like, you can do both.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of cool SciComm things now. I know it took you quite a journey to get here, but now it seems like you're doing a lot of cool things. So can you tell us a little bit about writing for a YouTube channel called, little known YouTube channel called It's Okay to Be Smart?
Yeah, that is one of the most fun things. I just love it. It's such a process too, but I guess I'll start with how I got that job, which is actually another fun, almost embarrassing story. I saw a call for writers on the National Association of Science Writers website. If you're a member, then you get access to their job board. So I saw a call for writers, and I had seen the show. I loved the show. I started thinking about my application, but you know, taking my time with it, I guess, and I would check the ad every day, basically, is it still up? Because there was no deadline, or maybe the deadline was later, I can't remember. Anyway, I go to check it one of those days, and the ad is completely gone. No more call for writers, it's just disappeared. So I think, I can't let that go away. So by memory, I try and recall what they had asked for application materials, and I remembered that they just wanted you to like send it to somewhere, maybe an email. And so I, by memory, put together an application, sent it off to this email in the void that I thought would get to the right people, and kind of waited. Well, this was about a week before I was set to go to the AAAS conference in Austin, Texas, which is where the show is made. And I'm going through the list of speakers and panels, or people on panels, and I see that the host and founder, Joe Hansen, is on one of the panels. So now I'm going to be at the same conference as Joe Hansen, who I just sent off an application to this job I really, really, really wanted.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, you're going to find him and talk to him. But when I was in his panel, I started getting cold feet, and I was just about to leave, and the friend that I was sitting next to kind of was like, no, you can't do that. I will wait for you. You can wait in that line of people talking to him. So I stood in line, and when it was my turn, I felt like the biggest nerd and just like socially awkward person, because here was this person that I've seen on the other side or on the computer screen so often, and super tall in person, and I think I just mumbled something like, I applied for the job and I hope you look at my application. I don't really remember. And he was super nice, and he took my card, and he said he'd contact me. And I figured that would be the end of that. And a few days, maybe a week later, I got a call, and they wanted to talk to me about writing for the show.
Wow.
And it was while I was still finishing up my PhD. So I think I remember them being, they were really understanding of, like, the timing of everything. I think at one point when I was about to defend my PhD, I was like, can we take a little break from writing? And they're like, no problem. Just call us when you're done. So yeah, they just started me out on an episode I pitched, which actually has done the best. My first one is the episode that's gotten the most views. And I've been writing for them since last year, last spring.
Wow.
Yeah, so the moral of the story is always, I don't know, seize the day, or, you know, yeah, there's always something you can do. What's the worst they could say? No.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, kind of terrible when it happens, but yeah, it worked out. Otherwise, you know, I could have just said, oh, the ad's gone. That's my opportunity gone, but
that's true. I feel like when applying to jobs, there's a lot of rules, like you have to meet this deadline, and you probably should meet the deadline, but that doesn't mean that's the deadline, that the opportunity is completely gone. Or like going up to the person in person, if you get to see them, that's a really cool way to have them remember you.
Yeah, and maybe with all of my nerdy excitement, it conveyed how much I was really excited to write for the show.
So here's something we haven't talked about yet. Burley coordinates NPR SciCommerce, which is a supportive community of scientists and engineers interested in improving their science communication skills. The awesome thing about this group is that you don't necessarily have to be a grad student or a prof. You can be an undergrad or even just a science enthusiast. So let's hear more about it.
So this community is, it's my base. I absolutely love this community. It's hands down what has got me into the science communication field. And even outside of the outreach and education, really we're a community of mainly graduate students that are interested in science communication and science writing. So we're over, I think we've got over 1,200 members now. It's all virtual, which we're really proud of, because that means there's a low barrier to entrance. So anyone can join, and we have a really cool program called Office Hours, which helps people trained as scientists that don't have formal training in writing and journalism get published in a non-academic journal. And it's one of our most popular programs, and I think why a lot of people join. So you can, if you're interested in joining NPR SciCommerce, likely because you're a trained scientist, graduate student, undergrad, faculty, really just a science enthusiast, and you're interested in the community of people interested in science communication, you can, Google NPR SciCommerce, it'll bring up the NPR page, but you can also email me to get involved at NPRSciCommerce@gmail.com. But we also have a Slack channel, you know, where you can be connected with these thousand other people across the country. And we have all different channels. So if you're interested in podcasting, if you're interested in inclusion in science, we have a whole channel dedicated to diversity and inclusion in science. We have job listings, and really the community is one of the strengths, you know, I find in any endeavor, having a community is huge. So you have like-minded people that you can go to and ask questions about science communication.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. I know in Canada, there's very few science communication programs, like professional degree programs. So it can often seem like, how can I learn these skills? But a community with job opportunities and other folks, like-minded folks, is very helpful with that.
Right. Definitely. And if you are a scientist and you're interested in science writing, if you're not at the right university, which there are a few that have programs, then you're kind of like wading through murky water. How do I get started? How do I know what I need to know?
Yeah.
I don't even know what I don't know. These communities can be really helpful. And like I said, it's definitely why I am where I am today. I mean, there are other factors, of course, but they helped me get published in a couple of places that I don't think I would have had access to, or I wouldn't have thought I could have published there had they not helped me.
Wow. How did you get involved with the group?
So Jill Pelka, who founded the group, came to my university during a chemistry career symposium, and they had a bunch of people on a panel discussing different things you could do with your degree once you were done. And they did have a research scientist on the panel, but they also had, I think, someone from a predominantly undergraduate institution talking about teaching and working there. They had someone in industry, and then they had Joe talking about science communication and, you know, his field of radio, but also just the wider idea of science communication. And after the panel, there were like breakout sessions where you could go sit at the table that you were interested in. And it was Joe and maybe like 7 or 8 graduate students. And he told us about his idea of kind of being a mentor for graduate students interested in communication. And he was just collecting emails at this point, going to universities, kind of recruiting graduate students. And so everything started with just an email list of him saying, oh, I have a Facebook page. If you want to send me cool science stories that focus more on the process and people of science rather than breaking news, I'd love to start sharing those. And then the community grew and grew, and then we added a Slack channel, and then they hired Maddie Safaya, who really brought the group to what it is today, and it's her position that I've recently taken over. But I was kind of there at the beginning, and I've just evolved. You know, I was just a community member. So a few years later, when they had a coordinator position, it was just perfect. You know, they wanted somebody who had been through the program, who had been active in the program, who had a little bit of experience working from home, which is what I do now. And so I kind of had all my ducks in a row, and it worked out really well. Now I love what I do.
Amazing. Yeah, the community that helped you, and now you're helping that community.
Yeah.
And can people join if they're outside of the U.S. as well?
Definitely.
Asking for a friend, me.
Absolutely. We would love to keep growing outside of the country. I can't tell you how many we have, but we do have NPR SciComers map. So if you join, you can see where everyone who, you know, wanted to put their location on the map is located. There are maybe 5 in Montana, but we're here.
Yeah. And just you and your cabin in the woods.
Yeah, there's really nobody next to me. The closest other SciComer is about 2.5 hours away, which in Montana time is next door.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I love that. I feel like people have one perception of what a scientist or a scientist or a science adjacent careers are. But you can live in a cabin in Montana and go snowboarding. You don't have to always be a wet lab scientist, which is what most people think of.
It is. And it's what I thought it had to be for a long time. And I'm glad I discovered it didn't have to be that way.
Yeah, I love that. And so now you have a very exciting opportunity coming up just around the corner. So you will be doing a science internship at PBS NewsHour. Is that correct?
Yes, I am so excited. This has been something I've wanted for years. And I still really can't actually believe that they picked me, which I'm trying to squash the imposter syndrome. But it's kind of like the pinnacle of what graduate student going into science writing, science communication could possibly get. So I'm super excited, pretty nervous. And that's going to start in a week and a half. So from what I know, you walk in and then you start writing.
Here it is, folks. Burley's about to tell you about that awesome Mass Media Fellowship Award that you can apply for. So let's dive in.
So everyone should know about this that's in graduate school that is potentially interested in a career in science writing. So AAAS is the American Association for the Advancement of Science. And they're the ones that publish Science, the magazine. And since, I should know the date that they started the fellowship, but it's, 40, 50 some years old. And every year they choose, 17 to 20 people to be mass media fellows. So these are people that are graduate students or sometimes undergrads or maybe postdocs, but that have shown enough interest in their activities to choose them for a media fellowship. So if you're chosen, then you are placed at one of the media sites, and they're all around the country. So PBS NewsHour is one of the sites, but Smithsonian, KQED, Wired, Scientific American have all been sites in the past. So everyone, all the fellows will meet in DC for like an orientation session, and then we'll all fly out to our sites and spend 9 weeks basically being mentored by the science news person at that media site, and really just learning everything we possibly can in those 9 weeks. Then we'll fly back to DC for a close-up session. It's such a great opportunity. And I'll say for anyone who is thinking about applying that this is my second attempt at applying for this fellowship, and that's not uncommon. I've heard people that have applied 3 times, and you're not eligible for the fellowship if you're 1 year out of your degree or if you're a postdoc outside of your appointment. So if you're interested in this fellowship but you're scared that it's not the right time, I still would recommend applying, because they get hundreds of applications, and I think it helps if you apply multiple years. So I would say do it now.
Did you hear that? That's your call to action. If you are eligible to work in the United States and are in the fields of life, physical, health, engineering, computer or social sciences, or mathematics, and you're interested in science writing, this fellowship might be for you. So next, I had to ask, what is Burley's favorite part of being a science writer?
I feel like I'm like a kid on a playground, right? A huge playground where I could go and play on anything I wanted. It's awesome to be able to dictate your own career and to choose the things that you're interested in writing about. A lot of freedom comes with it. So right now I'm in my cabin in the woods. My black lab is taking a nap, but if I feel like going outside and throwing the tennis ball for him, I can. If I feel like switching tasks to a different job, I can. There's just a lot of freedom that comes with it, and creativity, which I really love.
Yeah. It sounds like there's a lot of flexibility. You can kind of do what you want.
It is, which is very dangerous also.
True. As someone who's, like, I've been kind of freelancing, starting that off, and it's very much like you run your own schedule. So that can mean you get everything done or nothing done.
Exactly. And it's all your fault either way.
No pressure. I feel like it takes a certain kind of person to be able to work on freelancing.
Yes, yeah.
And so what are some of the challenges of your job?
Well, definitely the discipline part. You have to be good about doing what you say you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And the other side of it is, as a freelancer, you know, you don't get paid, you don't get jobs unless you go out there and you're really adamant at finding opportunities. So it can be difficult sometimes piecing your work together if you don't have just one job that you're focusing on. Another one of my biggest struggles is, even though I like a lot of alone time, I like working alone, it can be really isolating, and especially if you've got some imposter syndrome or confidence issues. If you're just sitting here alone all day, those little demons can kind of creep up on you. So the counter to that is, like I mentioned before, having a community. You really have to set yourself up to have a support system, whether that's virtual or if you have in-person meetups. you can really kind of get lost in your own head if you don't have those reality checks with your community that, yes, I'm good at this, I'm able, and I need to keep plugging along. And so if you can find communities that support you, I mean, I would say it's a necessity.
And finally, I asked Burley for her best advice for aspiring science communicators. Again, asking for a friend.
I would say start as early as you can, which is really hard to tell a graduate student who's working sometimes 80 hours a week. But you don't have to move mountains. You just have to do a little bit. Because at least in my case, in graduate school, if I hadn't started while I was there, once I got out, if I had nothing to go off of, it would have taken a really long time to get started. And I mean, even I'm a year out from my degree now, and I'm just really starting to make what someone might call a career. So I would say, one, get started as early as you can, even though that's little tiny things. Two, find a community. Anywhere that might be at your university, you might have a science desk, you might have a science blog, you might have community radio. Find community with people with like interests, because also in academia you can kind of get shunned by the research community if your interests lie outside of science, which I didn't find too much. I was very lucky in my lab that they were all very supportive, but so two, find community, and then three, write. If you want to write, if you want to podcast. But a lot of times we spend time thinking about it and talking about it, and we don't actually do the writing. If that means starting your own blog or writing a guest post on someone else's blog, just start getting it down on paper or, you know, audio if that's what you'd like to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it can seem intimidating, and like you said, you look back at your first pieces and you kind of cringe, but you have to start.
Yeah, I would say everything you start out in, you're not going to be an expert, and I look at it as you've got to get past those. So even if you're writing your first article and you think it's going to be terrible, just think of it as, well, I've got to get this out of my system so that I can get better at this and move on, and yeah.
Yeah, and it looks like it takes a lot of time. That's one thing I've been struggling with. It's like it'll take a few years of doing the work and writing a blog before you get an opportunity like, say, the one you have now.
Yeah, it did take, I would say, I had started my own blog. I had gotten published through the Office Hours program from the NPR SciCommerce a couple of times. I'd been writing for PBS. I had applied for the fellowship once. So I think they're looking for someone who has, even if it's my track record wasn't huge, I hadn't, you know, been an award-winning journalist, but they need to know that you have interest in this and that it goes back, you know, a year or two, and that you've been working on it already.
And where can people find you? Your social media, your upcoming writing, any events and initiatives?
Yeah, so I have my own website. It's kimberly-mccoy.com. I am also on Twitter, and I didn't understand Twitter when I started, so my handle is missing a few vowels, but that's because it wouldn't fit. It's at Travelin' Scientist, but it's missing the last I in scientist. And then the Mass Media Fellowship page lists all the current fellows, and so along with being on my website, everything that I publish with PBS this summer will go on the Mass Media Fellowship website.
Cool. So people can follow you there too.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for talking to me. I think I learned a lot.
Thanks for having me on.
And that's it for today's episode. I am so inspired by Burley's story. As a science communicator myself, I hope that one day I can be living my personal equivalent of a cabin in the mountains with a beautiful dog. To wrap up our episode, I asked Burley to update us on what she's been up to since we last spoke and how her summer at PBS NewsHour went. So she sent me an email that I will read for all y'all now. I'm putting on my best Burley voice. So here's what she said. Writing for PBS NewsHour this summer was absolutely amazing, and it definitely set me up to start a successful career in science communication. I got to learn what it was like to work in a newsroom under the mentorship of some amazing journalists. One highlight was when NewsHour host Judy highlighted one of my stories on the broadcast. They even showed my picture. It was surreal. One of my favorite parts was learning how to make short science videos. I was surprised to find out how much I liked working in that medium. Now I am piecing together a freelance career back home in rural Montana. I've got plenty of work. My responsibilities increased at NPR, and I might start writing for them. I've got work lined up for a trade magazine and possibly the NIH. That's the National Institute for Health. And I'll continue to write for the YouTube show It's Okay to Be Smart. I'm in talks to freelance for PBS, but we'll see if that works out. And I'm still hoping to get my own podcast off the ground this year, or maybe next. And that's the end of her blurb. She also sent me a link to all her PBS clips that I can include in the show notes. Thank you, Burley, for updating us on all the projects you've been up to. I'm thrilled to hear that you had an awesome summer. In the show notes, you can check out Burley's social media links, and you can also see what she's been up to at PBS NewsHour. To keep the conversation going, follow the podcast at ScienceSucksPod on Twitter. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes so other people can find the show and join our little but slowly growing family. This is Evie. Remember to chase your passions, carve your way through snowy slopes, and have an amazing week.